Winning Cures Everything. Now for your hosts, Gary and Chris.
Welcome in. It is the Tuesday, July 13th edition of the show, the live version. I'm Gary.
And I'm Chris.
And it is also the Wednesday, July 14th podcast. So if you have not subscribed to the podcast, go ahead and knock that thing out. We would certainly appreciate it. Going to be a lot of fun. We're heading into football season, so there are things that we are going to discuss. Some interesting topics today, nothing that is major, but stuff for us to kind of shoot back and forth, and typically that's what Chris and I like to do. It's the whole reason why we started this show. Just have a good time and talk sports like we're sitting at the bar. So with that said, go ahead and let you guys know you can find everything you need to know about us, including every show that we put out, every appearance that we make, etc. You can find it all at winningcureseverything.com. You can also find our college football show. You can find that on YouTube. Just search out SBR Picks or go to sbrpicks.com/NCAAF, and that will be your one-stop shop for all of your college football gambling content. August is right around the corner. This is the last month that we will not have college football. Well, I think we're, 46 days away? And NFL is just a little longer than that. But at the beginning of August, I mean, Chris, we got preseason games.
That's right.
Like, we got football coming up. So
we're getting very, very, very close.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. So with that said, we're not going to talk about work or any of that mess today because we have both been through the ringer, I would imagine. We are going to start talking football right off the bat. And this will be more of a philosophical discussion, I guess, just to see where we stand on this issue. The Ohio State Tattoo Five. Now, this is the bunch that basically cost the senator, Jim Tressel, his job when he was at Ohio State, which led to the 1 year of Luke Fickell, then the Urban Meyer situation, all that kind of mess, right? Tressel was winning at a super high clip. And Terrell Pryor in that bunch went and got a bunch of tattoos. They autographed a bunch of stuff, all this kind of mess. And they got, I believe it was like a 5-game suspension. I mean, just all kind of NCAA trouble. And Tressel ended up losing his job because he claimed to not know about it, but he had emails that he was informed. I mean, it was just a whole mess, right? Well, under the current NCAA guidelines, the NIL stuff that went into effect basically at the beginning of July, that would seem to be legal now. Now, under Ohio State's specific NIL rules, what they did was not legal, like under Ohio State's own rules that they have put in. But under NCAA rules, under NCAA guidelines, it would be fair to say you could do that nowadays. You could exchange autographs for tattoos or whatever. But they want their CFB records, their stats and whatnot, to be reinstated inside the NCAA record books. We went kind of through this with the Reggie Bush thing last week. He wants his Heisman back. The Heisman Trust said, well, that's up to the NCAA. If they reinstate your records, then all right, you know, maybe we'll talk about it. It's kind of the same situation here. There's no Heisman Trophy at stake or anything like that. They just want their stats back in the record books. I don't know how I'm not super strong on one side of the fence or the other. I feel it was a rule at the time. It was broken. You got caught. Is what it is. Like, how important is a stat in a record book? On the other side, I do feel like, hey, if it's legal now, like, it's kind of the whole thing with if you got somebody in jail for weed, you know, and now it's legal in that state, like, why are they still in jail? Well, at the time, it was still a rule. So, I don't know what to think about this, and I was hoping maybe you could push me one way or the other. How do you feel about this?
Well, I think that's a really bad analogy because in one situation, these people literally have nothing in their life change at all today that Correct. Can be undone. All right. You're talking about numbers that'll go in a computer.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, I'm talking that was to the extreme.
You can look up those stats and everyone can see the stats of those games. They're just not in official records in the NCAA. So I don't give a shit. Okay. That's a dumb fight. Reggie Bush's thing is actually different because it's a physical trophy and award that was taken away that has a lot of prestige. All right. True. If they lost an award that they had won due to it, that's fine. Vacating wins and vacating stats, I don't care about. Comparing that to somebody who is sitting in a concrete cell who's locked in a hole, because they smoked weed or had weed on them is totally different. Those people's freedoms have been completely removed because they did something quote unquote illegal. That's
I know not it's a extreme. Good comparison.
I don't want us doing that. And I want to address that, but my opinion on this is a dumb fight. These guys have nothing better to do with their lives. Like, you were railroaded for something that we both agreed was stupid at the time. All right. I don't like Ohio State. I'm not a Ohio State fan in any stretch of the imagination, but I didn't agree with this ruling by any stretch because I think it's dumb. And I think 90% of what the NCAA is dumb and wrong and immoral and unethical. But at the same time, man, that was a long ass time ago. What are you trying to fight? We have so many fights ahead of us. Trying to go backwards and fight something to change what? Nothing.
Yeah, nothing.
It's not even that, like, if the stats had been removed from the ethos, okay? If you couldn't go look those numbers up and you wanted to correct that and you wanted to reinstate them in the world where people could find them, that's a little different because historically you want something in record. But we have that. We have that in ESPN box scores and Yahoo Sports box scores and CBS box scores and every other
Pro Football Reference.
Pro Football Records and all of these other databases. We all saw what happened, and there's a record of it. This bullshit organization called the NCAA doesn't have record anymore. But we all know it happened. So we don't care. Who cares what their records say in 10 years? They're not going to exist, and those records aren't going to matter.
Yeah.
Because they're not going to be a thing anymore, because hopefully somebody will come to their senses and burn that place to the ground.
I mean, I think we are getting closer to that.
Yeah, I do too. Yeah. Which is why I think this is a really dumb fight. I just feel like these guys taking another opportunity to admit what the NCAA did was wrong and call it out today. I get it. You want people to know and remember you and what they did to you. You know, you got a valid beef there. But at the same time, I mean, are you really going to spend energy fighting these people for something that's not a reward? Like, there's no payoff. To what end is the question that I ask?
Yeah, I'm the same way. I think if we start with them, because this was over a decade ago, if we start with them, then you can go. I mean, you can keep going back and back and back and back and back, and at some point, I mean, you're not going to be able to turn over every single record. So why even start? Like, everybody knows what Reggie Bush did, like That's as right. far as what he did on the field, and you we can all watched still him look win those a Heisman stats trophy. Up. Yeah, we all
like,
watched
those
him.
Stats. Those stats. It's not like a government sealed document that nobody has access to. If nobody had access to that information and couldn't find it, historians of the future of college football could not look the information up and see what your stats were, I would feel differently about it. Everybody in the world can find what these stats are. It's yes. only in the eyes of the NCAA do they not exist.
Exactly. So what is the purpose of reinstatement if that entity is not even going to exist in another
decade? And we believe the people that are the gatekeepers that you're fighting right now won't be around in a decade. Your grandkids won't know what the NCAA was outside of the fact that there was some backwoods organization that nobody knew what to do with.
Yes. Yes. You are correct about that.
I really believe that, by the way. I have a lot of friends and a lot of other guys that are college football fans that think I'm crazy when I say that. In 20 years, those people that are 12 years old and starting to get into college football won't know what the NCAA was outside of a historical thing.
I think you're right.
I believe that.
Yeah. Well, and if it's not that the NCAA is completely torn down, it's that the Power Five schools have moved away from them. Right.
Yeah. Like there'll be a way. So different than what it is originally that it'll just be different.
I mean, it already looks different than it did, 30 years ago. So
correct.
Everything changes. Everything changes, my friend. All right. Talking about college football, we'll stay on that for just a little bit. Dennis Dodd. We love Dennis Dodd, CBS Sports, all that good stuff. He's been covering this sport for years and years. Every year at CBS Sports, he puts out his annual hot list. Oh, by the way, McKinnon jumped in on YouTube, said, howdy, gents. If anybody else would like to dive in on the comments, feel free to do so. It's going to populate right there in your bottom left-hand corner of your screen, no matter what platform you talk from, whether it's Periscope, Twitch, Facebook, YouTube, etc. So go ahead and dive in if you would like to. So we released his hot seat standings, right? And the year after COVID is kind of strange to figure out what the pulse is, what the temperature is like for some of these jobs, right? And you and I have talked about a couple of them back and forth, trying to figure out, okay, what, you know, what, who really is on a hot seat right now? He has three of them that are in win now or be fired mode. And I don't know that I necessarily agree with two of his three. So I'll go ahead and start with those, okay?
Okay.
The first one is Justin Fuente. Now, I agree 100%. Virginia Tech. I believe he has to win this year. Like, I think he's gotten himself to that point. Jamal Cooper jumps in and said, I just found you guys, and this is my new favorite show. That's what I'm talking
about. Thank you. Man, the internet's not always such a hateful-ass place. Thanks, Jamal.
You got that right. Hey, subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss all the other stuff, my friend.
Yeah, man.
So, Justin Fuente, yes. You tend to agree?
Yeah, no, as much as we love Fuente, and we are Fuente dudes, it is time.
Yes, you better win something this year.
You keep losing to whatever the FCS schools are,
Old Dominion,
that you keep playing, and, yeah, then you got a problem, all right?
Yes, you are correct about that. Scott Frost at Nebraska and Randy Edsall at UConn. I don't know that I agree with these. Okay. Reason being,
all right,
Frost,
Wait. You don't agree that it's, you don't,
I don't think they have to win this season.
Okay. But do you think they should have to win this season?
And
you just think that the administration there doesn't care about football enough, or whatever the logic is behind the administration, they're not going to do it? Or is it both?
I think it's a combination. I think it's a combination. I think Frost, like, yeah, you need to start showing some signs of improvement here, but we're not on the final rung of his ladder yet.
I also want explanations of what is win now. If your Scott Frost is 8-4, a win now season, is it 7-5 a win now season? Or are those both fireable? I mean, are we talking 10-2 or a bust?
No. He's talking bowl game or bust. Like, that's what God says.
6-6?
Yeah.
6-6, that's the level of win now or bust?
Yeah, you got to show some kind of some kind of improvement this season, I think.
Boy, and that is a – listen, it's a wonder neither one of these schools are SEC schools, okay? Because Auburn just fired the shit out of a guy because he didn't win 10 games 2 years in a row back-to-back, all right? LSU fired the shit out of the winningest coach at LSU – because he didn't win 10 games 2 years back-to-back. 9 wins will get your ass canned, okay?
Yes.
And you're talking 6-6 will save a job?
It's
pretty... At big boy schools, this is not 6-6 at Rutgers or Maryland. This is 6-6 at Nebraska and Virginia Tech. I mean, God, when we were in high school, Va Tech was the shit. They were on the top of the football heap. They didn't win championships, but they were always in that conversation as the ACC team.
Yes. Yes.
And now 6-6 is a job saver? Are you kidding me?
And so Jamal said you guys are missing one. He said Clay Helton, but we're going to get to that.
Yeah, yeah. This is what this guy, Dennis Dodd, his list, and we're just going through his list. So, I don't think Clay Helton's a five, right?
No, he's not a five.
I didn't see that.
Randy Edsall at a five. This is a program that didn't play last year, and for whatever reason, they don't
care about football.
Yeah, they don't care about football. So why would they fire Randy Edsall?
Like, so this is one where I was curious. I'm splitting hairs, but I'm asking the. Is this, you think he's wrong about the administration, or you think he's wrong because they shouldn't be on the list? Because this is one where I 100% think he should be a five, and yeah, I don't think he will be a five because I don't think he's on the hot seat.
That's it.
But he should be on the hot seat.
I think because that school doesn't give a damn that he's not on the hot seat.
Maybe he should,
but I also wonder if you're not getting any kind of support from the university for your program, what exactly are the expectations? So what is a hot seat if nobody cares? right?
Well, that's the ultimate question, which is why I was asking how many wins we got to get to not be on said hot seat.
Yeah, yeah, you're right. Hey, by the way,
Patrick, he's got my boy Orgeron as a four. Yes. I'm telling you, if Orgeron goes 6-6, it's going to be pretty toasty.
Yes.
Patrick, but that's Houston a different situation.
Jumped in on YouTube. He said, wouldn't the schools just create a governing body to legitimize their theft in place of the NCAA? Yeah, they're going to create their own thing.
Oh, but somebody's going to turn into the son of a bitch and start stealing from folks. That's that's what we do in this country. We demonize one group of people for being so horrible at their job, and then another group of people rise up, take power, take control, and they start doing the same shit the other people were doing because the other people were making a lot of money doing it.
Yes. Yes, 100%. Like, that will continue on. That will just continue on forever and ever. So the other names on this list, the fours here, there are six of them. Herm Edwards, and we all know about that one.
That's right? A different situation, that's different, though. That's not a win-now situation. That's where I think this is wrong.
Ed Orgeron. Now, we just talked about that. Yeah, if he goes 6-6, that's a problem. But you know, anything above that, if he goes 8-4, I think he's going to be fine.
Ed is 100% not on the hot seat. We've talked about this multiple times on the show. I don't mean to keep cutting you off. I apologize about that.
Good. You're good.
Yeah, I'm a little hyper right now. I don't know why either. I haven't eaten or drank anything in a long time. I think the media really likes the idea of Ed Orgeron being on the hot seat because he's an interesting character.
Yes.
And when LSU was bad last year, they had nothing to talk about Ed, but he's a good guy to talk about. He's an interesting person to bring up and to write about. And so we have to write these negative stories because he's not good enough right now to write about the good stories. But those negative stories, I fully believe, are complete farce. I know too many people down in Baton Rouge, too many people connected to this program, and too many people that are just general fans of the team, and zero of them are upset with him. We want to win, but he's not getting fired, guys. Not after this year. Not unless he gets in trouble something wrong.
If it's part of the stuff that's going on.
If we have a Les Miles situation come out, that's I'm not speaking to that though.
Yeah,
we're talking about wins and losses, hot seat, and he's just not getting fired. That's just not how this is going to go down. That's a media thing. They're just trying to write about him because he's an interesting guy to write about.
Yes, two of these names. So we'll do these two, and then we'll talk about the two big ones. Walt Bell, number four. He's at UMass. Again, how much of this is hot seat? How hot is the seat at UMass? Like, do they care about football? Probably not. You know, he's only been there for 2 years, and last year was a COVID year. So I don't think it's that hot. And then Dana DeMel at UTEP. You know, again, it's UTEP. Like, he won three games last year. It's the first time that they've won three games there in what feels like a decade.
I was just about to say, that's like the best season they've had in a long time.
Yes. Now, granted, one win was over Louisiana Monroe, and two were over FCS teams. But, like, what are we doing? You know, I'm curious, like, if he doesn't do something to get, like, 3 to 5 wins this year, yeah, maybe he's in a little bit of trouble because you got to figure out something if he's not the guy. But I don't think it's that hot there. I don't think it's crazy. The two big names here are Clay Helton at USC. He's a four. He's been on the hot seat for years now. I mean, we're talking, like, 3-4 years. But he had I felt like he had kind of worked his way off of that when he hired Graham Harrell as the offensive coordinator. USC will continue to win 8-9 games a year, 10 games a year, whatever it is. They will never be in national title contention. And until that program gets to a point where they want to get serious, I think he's going to continue to be there. Like, that's all it is. So I don't know that he's really on the hot seat. And then the other one is Jim Harbaugh. Harbaugh, like, landed a – so he signed an extension, and it was a drop-down in pay.
Yep.
And I don't know – it might make it easier to fire him, but his buyout is still, you know, pretty high up there. Why would you fire him a year after he signs an extension unless they go, you know, if he ends up 3-9 or 4-8 or something like that, then, yeah. It's 7-5. Like, you're working through a rebuilding year. You're trying to figure some stuff out. You got a whole new batch of recruits coming in. I don't see him going anywhere. I don't see this becoming a hot seat situation. This feels like it should be a three, if nothing else.
Yeah, like,
you kind of feel the same.
Yeah. So I want to get back to the UMass situation. Dan Wetzel has this opinion. Dan Wetzel's Yahoo sports writer, one of our favorite sports writers. He is my favorite sports writer. Love the guy. And he graduate of UMass. He's an alum. And he's got a joking opinion. And I've been thinking about it more and more since I've heard him talking about this for the last several months, jokingly. UConn and UMass should merge their two programs into one football program. Send the money together and create a New England United college football team.
I'd be totally fine with that.
And so I looked up what I was doing. I was looking up how far apart the schools are. They're about an hour and a half away from one another. So you got a little bit of a drive for one school or the other, unless you want to send both of them 45 minutes and buy a facility somewhere in the middle of, you know, Connecticut or Massachusetts. I know that sounds ridiculous. I really like that idea, and I wonder, is there any conceivable way the administrations of those two places could say it's better to be in D1 football, it's better to be in FBS, and come together and split that money than it is for both of those programs to drop down and make what they can make at the lower level? Because I think even at the lower level, they're getting their ass kicked and they're making no money.
You're probably right.
It's now costing them money. Unless now UMass is great about going and taking that paycheck. UConn doesn't do that very often, but UMass, they're going to go out and they're getting paid $2 million, $2 million, two to three times a year to take an ass whooping from somebody.
Yes. I mean, they're both independents.
Yeah.
I mean, everything is basically a buy game. Like, there's no way to be competitive. Like,
no, there's just no way. If they merged, could they be, you know, a middling tier program?
Maybe. Possibly. I mean, you never
know. Is that conceivable at all, or just that's like, because you're talking about two athletic departments that if you told them, hey, you're going to cut your biggest expense in half and you've got a better chance of raising your revenue by doing this as well. What's the negative?
I don't know that they would be willing to work together as two separate institutions, right?
Yeah, no, it just definitely has to be a marriage between two athletic departments.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I think that's the only negative here. But I just, I don't know how it would work.
Because I really think both those programs should drop back down. I mean, UMass, didn't they just get up to basically D1 a couple years ago?
It was 5, 6, 7 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, it's like about within the last 10 years, but not last year, obviously.
So, and UConn's been around for a while.
UConn's been around for a long time. So they're not the same as UMass. It's just weird to me. We'll actually get back to the good teams.
Yeah. So, hey, Eric Cotton, by the way, said, "What's up, guys? Haven't checked you guys out in a while. Dying for anything football."
We're excited for football, man.
Patrick said, "Chris, hope you celebrated Italy coming back against the odds and beating England." So I know that you did.
I did. And I enjoyed that very much, my people.
And Jamal jumped in. He said, "I think Clay gets fired this year because of the athletic director. I'm a big USC fan. Clay has lost the fan base." I think the issue is, does USC have those guys that are willing to pay the buyout and that are willing to pay whatever it takes to go get somebody better? And if you're looking for somebody better, who is that? Like, Clay has kind of picked up the recruiting a little bit here lately. You know, I don't know. I don't know what the expectation.
What I would suggest to a fan would be, let's give him this year. Let's give him an honest shot at this year. Have your criticisms every game. Have your criticisms, but give him an honest shot, because if he is improving and the recruiting is getting there, which means next year you should be a little bit better than you are this year, and the year after that you should be a little bit better than you are there. If you get the results that are bad again, I do think it's a fireable offense. I do think it's time. I don't know what his buyout would look like at the end of this year.
Like, what are the bad results?
I mean, I do think USC being a 7-5 team in that conference is pretty fireable. Looking at their schedule, you know, they got a tough non-con against Notre Dame. That's where it ends. So you got a couple of pay for wins. You know, you still get a bunch of shitty teams in the Pac-12. I need to see what that buyout looks like, mainly because I'm just
Well, regardless of the buyout, insane. Like if it's an SEC team, like they are.
We're firing done. Them. Yeah, but I think that's insane, though. Like that's where we're different is I think the way we do stuff in the SEC is insane.
Agreed.
Okay? Like I'm a fan of this conference. I'm a fan of one of these teams. Firing coaches the year after you just signed an extension means you should have to fire everybody in the athletic department. I'm just like I know now you're buying out more people, but that every head has to roll at that point. Anybody yeah. whose signature signed off on giving the extension to somebody and then wanting to fire them the next year, all those people have to be fired. Not just yeah. one. I'm talking presidents. I'm talking everybody because we have to stop doing that.
Hey, Jamal said, but fellas, it's been over 5 years and he never beats good teams. I mean, I can't argue that.
No, you know? you're right. So the question Gary was bringing up is something that we bring up all the time. Who are you going to go get?
Okay? Is it James Franklin? Because if it's James Franklin, how much better is that?
I was just about to say, are you sure the next guy you bring in is going to be better than what you got?
I don't know that you can just go steal a like great a
Matt
coach
Campbell. Do you think you can just go take one of the best coaches in college football from a smaller school?
Yeah, I don't know that there's a ton of people that want to move to California because of the tax rate and all that. Like you'd have to pay. Or like extraordinary.
I was numbers. Just about to say you're talking about the cost difference of a place like a state like Texas or Tennessee, where the cost of living in Tennessee is a fraction of even Texas, much less California, and then there's no state income tax. Yeah, you pay both of them $5 million a year. Now one guy's making 2.5 and the other one's making, 4.3.
And Jamal said, so you don't think Matt would leave? I think he's kind of shown.
I don't know the answer to that.
Yeah, I don't know. But
I'll tell you this: there was a day and a time where USC would be able to put out the word and get anybody they want. I don't know that we live in that world anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, there was a day and a time where every coach that's ever coached at Iowa State would leave for USC in a second, and they would do it for no money. You know, you don't even have to buy their airfare; they'll pay it themselves. And I just don't know that we live in that world today.
Well, no, everybody is making $2+ million as a Power Five head coach.
Well, so, but quality of life and quality of the way to live is there was, I mean, hell, the 90s and the early 2000s and the 80s, California was the place you want it to be. Yes. And now you have people packing their shit and leaving California in droves, which means it ain't so easy to talk middle America guys into moving to California. No, like it's a great place to vacation. Maybe you could spend a week there on the beach. That's nice. But raising a family there, I don't know that a lot of people want to do that anymore.
No, I think you're right. I think you're 100% right. Let's move off of that topic. Let's jump into the NFL for just a little bit. There is new data out from Old School Football. So Michael Strahan has kind of forever, and forever is a short term nowadays.
No,
but he has been recognized by the NFL as the regular season sack leader for several years now. I still think that the last sack that he got to break the record was kind of a joke because it was handed to him. But either way, 20 years now that the NFL has belonged to Michael Strahan. He had 22.5 in 2001. But Pro Football Reference has been going back through these old NFL game books and whatnot, and former Lions Pro Bowler Al Bubba Baker actually hit 23 sacks during his 1978 Defensive Rookie of the Year campaign. These, of course, the Pro Football Reference numbers are unofficial, but, is this, like, they've used official NFL game books. They've logged unofficial tackle totals for decades. Do we kind of start looking at some of these records and maybe go all the way back to as long as we have books? Like, why,
Patrick said, have we not done that in the past? I don't know the answer to that. No, and Patrick asked, are we taking away the Brett Favre sack? I don't think they're taking anything away from Strahan. They didn't make his number smaller. They're looking back and seeing other people had more sacks in the past
that were not officially counted.
Went back that far and added them up.
Yeah, because they didn't tally sacks back in like the 70s and
80s. Yeah, they just tallied tackles, and so now they're going back and look. My question is, how much film do we have? How are they reading this? Like,
I mean, these game books. I know
they didn't call them like sacks.
Yeah, these game books, they've got to go back. I mean, this one goes all the way back to 1978. So, I mean, we're going almost 50 years back now. I mean,
well, 78, we got plenty of film. All these games were being recorded then, so that's not that's not an issue. I mean, I don't. This is stuff I don't care about, really. Like you know me. I don't. I like to look back at history of the game. Okay.
Yeah.
And basically, I look back at history of the game to see greatness or not, nostalgia, where we were, and how the game is played now. But I don't really care about like specific records. Like none of that matters. If a player I loved had a record. Okay. And then somebody comes around and beats that record that I hate. Like, that doesn't change anything for me. I don't really care. I do like the idea of getting stuff accurate though. Like,
yes.
Like you shouldn't be upset that they took this away from Strahan. But this is just one of those things where do you think the people, this is a completely different question, that are going back and rewatching all this stuff and redocumenting this, are they happy with their life, or do they just want to put the revolver in their mouth and end it all? Because that sounds like I love
looking at
football
numbers all day, every day.
But just watching 76, you know, year football film of the Detroit Lions, like, just sounds like kill me now. Just here's $1,000 to a drifter, and just don't let me see it coming.
I mean, maybe. Like, I think there are some people that actually enjoy this. They enjoy the stats. They enjoy diving through the numbers. And I think it's okay for us to go through and find the actual numbers. Like I'm okay with it
being at. What we can't do is 10 years from now or 20 years from now, another group of nerds lock themselves in a closet and then come out with different results from 1975. Like, wait a minute, hang on, no. People already looked at this and came up with it, but they were wrong and they saw it differently. And really, the numbers look like this. This is what I can't handle us doing.
Yeah, no, I tend to agree. Patrick said, I know Derek Thomas is the true college football single season attack holder. Yeah, he is. But they were also keeping stats for sacks in 1986 when he did it. So, it's a different thing. If we were relitigating statistical records, wouldn't be surprised if Dick Night Train Lane holds most records. Yeah, probably so, just on name alone.
Yeah. Well, and I was about to say, I mean, if you start going back to where they just didn't keep stats the way they keep stats now and trying to relitigate numbers, I'm going to bet our record books would look a lot different. They would they just would. But same question to the, you know, the Tattoo Five. Jesus, what a dumbass name. To what end? Okay.
Yeah.
At some point in time, I guess we want historical accuracy. All right. That's fine. But Jesus, man, like we didn't keep stats on sacks back then. So we just don't count how many sacks that person had. Like the game was just played so differently. And we didn't know that tackling a quarterback behind the line of scrimmage was viewed differently than it is now.
Yeah.
We didn't know it would ever be viewed as what it is today.
I'm with you. Anyway.
I just find all that weird.
It is. It certainly is. I'm trying to pull up this article about Ben Roethlisberger, and I cannot seem to get it to pop up.
His diet?
Yes. So Ben Roethlisberger's diet has apparently changed, and the headline was, it is even stricter, or it I think the correct grammar is more strict, even more strict than Tom Brady, with a new diet and weight loss plan per report. The 39-year-old quarterback is entering what would be his final season as the Pittsburgh Steelers quarterback. I haven't actually seen what the diet is. That's why I'm trying to read through here. But
I need to know how long we've been on this diet.
Let's see.
Because that sounds like a headline writer just trying to write shit.
Everything in this article thus far is talking about his salary and all this. But the only news is about the, you know, he's on a diet that's more strict than Brady. Like,
yeah. First off, I want to address this. Okay. I have thoughts about this when I saw that. My first thing is this: if you've been doing this for a month, congratulations. Okay. Like, anybody can do something really hard and strict for a month. All right. And we'll see massive results, by the way. Like, I'm a fat slob who've tried a million different diets over my life. If I was to ever get super strict on a diet, I would lose 40, 50 pounds in a month. I could do anything in a month that see unbelievable life-changing results. Tom Brady's been doing this shit for a decade. Ben Roethlisberger, you stick to this crazy strict diet for a decade, and then you can say, I care about my body the way Tom Brady cares about his body.
I don't buy that. Like, I don't buy that he cares as much as Brady.
Just because he's doing something that might be more restrictive and harder, more difficult than what Tom's doing, doesn't mean that what he's doing is, you know, makes him gonna be in better shape or whatever than Tom is. Because Tom actually believes in the lifestyle of what he's doing, and Ben's just a, you know, just a guy that's trying to make it up some stairs in the morning.
Yes. Yes. I'm with you. The reporter is Ryan Burr, and he said that his diet is more strict than that of Buccaneers quarterback Tom Brady. He cited a source from Roethlisberger's camp that suggests the quarterback is, quote, obsessed with his new workout plan in an effort to prove naysayers wrong entering 2021, said he will never mention the beating he has taken in the media. But a source says from a dedication standpoint, he has never seen anything from Ben close to this in the past. He has been so driven since the season ended.
All right. But good thing that if you let yourself go, that you get back on track, and this comes from a guy who's never gotten back on track, but let himself go a lot.
Ditto.
It's a positive thing that if you let yourself go, that you ever get back on track. Okay. That's a good thing. That's never a bad thing. I don't want to commend him for it. That doesn't make you a fucking hero. Okay.
Yes. I agree. Like,
you're the one that if I got my life together and dropped 100 pounds and became super healthier, like, that doesn't make me a hero. Congratulations. I might live to be 60. That's a good thing for, these are all positives for me, but all the negatives were all things that I brought on myself.
Yeah. Yeah.
Aaron Rodgers won't have to do this because Aaron Rodgers has never let himself get to this point. You know, Deshaun Watson hasn't let himself get to this point. So they'll never get to be called a hero like this.
Yes.
Because they just so far haven't let themselves fall apart.
Hey, McKinnon jumped in and said, that dude needs to stick to water and crackers. Patrick said, but does Big Ben's diet account for tequila shots served in Milledgeville, Georgia? Joseph said, we know Ben's diet includes that six-pack of Corona. And Philip Wiggins said, Big Ben cares about Cheetos. So, anyway, a lot of Big Ben fans here.
Let's see him come into shape. And I'm going to bet he looks a big-time different, okay?
Yeah.
And, like, he's really motivated because people in the media were harsh on him. Yes, you're a professional athlete and you look like shit on national TV. Yeah, people are hard on you.
Yes, I'm with you.
People, fat asses like me who are in a million times worse shape than you laugh at you for being out of shape, okay?
Yes,
but I sit on my ass and talk on the internet. You play a professional sport. There's a difference in how we've chosen to live our lives.
We can see the difference between the other professional athletes on your team.
Yeah, that's right.
And you.
I look like a lot of guys on the internet.
Yes.
You look like zero people playing quarterback.
Oh, my God.
That's the difference. Look at our peers and see which one stands out.
Yes, 100%. Let's move off from there. I want to hit on a few more topics before we close this thing out. Wimbledon, did you see this about match fixing?
No, I've seen nothing on tennis.
There are two Wimbledon matches from last week that are under investigation for allegedly being fixed, according to a report by German newspaper Die Welt. The investigation was launched after several very specific and suspicious bets took place surrounding matches during the tournament earlier in July, so last week. According to the report, suspicions were raised over a first-round men's doubles match. There were large bets placed against a favored duo at, quote, irregular times. The pair ended up winning the first set that increased the odds that they would be defeated. However, the tandem ended up losing the next three sets. The second match allegedly is focused on opponents of a German player in a singles match. After that second set, there were extremely high bets that were placed on the exact score of the third bets and prop bets surrounding the number of service games. Those bets ended up coming to fruition. Now, the International Tennis Integrity Agency has not released any information around it, but they have received 34 different reports of strange matches since January. And this is interesting.
Russian, big deal, man.
I mean, this is not the first time it's happened in the last year. Yana Sizakawa was arrested for allegedly fixing a match at the French Open in 2020, last June. So this is interesting, man. Like, this is something.
Tennis is one of those sports where you can do this because all you have to do is get to a decent player or a decent team, like a couple. Because if they can ever get into a situation where they're favored and they think they should win, they do exactly what they did. And I've actually, so this, and this was, some of these stories are back before like live betting happened, unless you were in Las Vegas. So you're talking the 80s,
yeah, years,
90s.
Years.
I know people that were involved in gambling scandals and fixing games and stuff like that around here in Memphis. And I'm close to them. I've heard a lot of stories. And the way they would fix games, it's basically the old school. It's a financial term now of pump and dump. Before the game, a couple of like sharp players would go and make a decent sizable bet on like the favorite. And then that would increase the odds on the dog. And if they've got the dog, the favorite is going to tank for them for whatever reason or point shave. Then once the game gets started or the match gets started or whatever it is, the favorite tries to get out into a lead, making a live betting situation even that much stronger. And then you make a second half play. Basketball is where they did a lot of point shaving.
Yeah.
And now you're getting unbelievable odds. I mean, just crazy, crazy odds on your money because the favorite is already up. And if you start placing money line picks on the dog at that point in time, you're getting stupid odds. And then you just get a shitload of people to make a bunch of small bets to not raise any flags and bing, bang, boom.
And you get a bunch
of money. You made yourself a lot of money. Now they were able to do that back in the '80s and the '90s, a little easier because it was easier to get to one or two guys. We didn't have media. These guys weren't super famous or whatever. And you could find small schools, basically in college basketball, where one player on the team that was good enough to win the game and or lose the game for the team.
Yes.
So tennis is basically one of the few sports you can do that with now.
Now Patrick Houston said, you're just scratching the surface. Tennis is the dirtiest sport in the world.
Yeah. And it sets itself up to be that way because I do think we have a middle class of tennis where they're professionals, but they don't make any real money.
Yeah.
And the cost to be in these matches and to fly all around the world to compete at the top of the level is so high, but they're not getting the Nadal sponsorships. They're not Serena Williams. They're not that good, and they don't make that much money. So it's easier to pay them off.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're right.
Sports books all around the world cover tennis bets. And so you can get bets down in from everywhere to Dubai, to Vegas, to all over Europe, to South America. Like you can get any sports book in the world to take action. You can spread that money out easily.
Yeah. And the limits are not, you know, super low. Like you can get some pretty high dollars. So,
but even then you just spread it out.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Spread it out.
You get to a stupid number spreading it out.
Yes. No, you're right about that. Let's close out with a couple of weird stories, and you know how much I enjoy these. All right, first off, this won't take a ton of time, but Heritage Auctions in Dallas sold two video games last week that ended up netting them almost $2.5 million. Super Mario 64 went an unopened box of Super Mario 64, the game, went for $1.56 million.
God dang.
I am old enough now to where the things that I remember coming out being like a huge thing when N64 came out, now those games are so ancient and worth so much. If I look back at it, because I had this game, if I had not opened the game and played with it.
Yeah, but that concept doesn't even like equate.
I know. Because it's a game it's supposed to be played with. Like, what are we doing? But who in the world would pay $1.56 million? It's a millennial. No, it's a Gen Z kid that's got a ton of money.
It's nerds with internet money. That's
yes.
like we with the auction market for pop culture things in like nerd culture is just stupid. Like, and it's getting to a point where it dwarfs sports memorabilia, and it dwarfs classic, like old school cars and watch collectibles.
That's insane to me.
It's internet nerd culture is a thing, and these people have lots and lots of disposable income.
Oh yes. Legend of Zelda, the NES game, that one went for $870,000. An unopened game. The number figures for these, I cannot even fathom. As soon as you open, like, obviously they would buy it not to open it, but what do you do with it?
Frame it, put it in a shadow box, and preserve it and frame it.
God, man,
and then in 10 years from now, sell it to another nerd for $1.3 million.
Yeah. This is an investment at $870,000. Yeah. I'll get more than $1 million here in a few years. Like, that's crazy. Yeah. That's just what it is.
I watch a lot of these like auction things for stuff, and I have over the, I've just always been fascinated. I've never had money, and so I watch other people spend money on frivolous shit. And it used to be cars. It used to be collectible cars. Famous people own the car, or classic cars, or historic cars. And then you'd get into like watches from famous people, and like golf clubs from, like, it was like weird things that famous people had. And then we got into sports memorabilia, which was just insane.
Yes.
From the 70s, 80s, and 90s. Just absolutely insane. And now you're talking, if you can get like a, you know, a Star Wars blaster that was used on one of the movies, it doesn't even have to be like it could be like the lowest box office of the original three. But like, I mean, that thing's going for like $3-4 million.
Oh yeah. And it doesn't even have to be one that was necessarily used in the film. Like, it's just one that was on set. One of the backups.
That thing, you could buy like two of James Dean's cars for that.
Yeah, that's so insane.
And that's a car.
Oh, my God. All right, we'll close out.
It's just the world. The people that have more money.
Yes. It's bananas to me. Absolutely bananas. Finally, we're going to close out with this one. Did you hear about the Ohio State Highway Patrol trooper pulling the Heimlich maneuver on a guy that he pulled over?
No.
Okay, good. Trooper Charles Hoskin conducted a traffic stop for a vehicle that was allegedly traveling at 94 miles per hour in a 70 mile per hour zone. Dash camera video posted to the Ohio State Police Twitter account shows Hoskin asking if the driver could breathe before helping him out of the car and performing the Heimlich. The man expelled a bag of marijuana, and then he apologized to the officer. The officer said, do you want to die over a minor offense? He received a citation for speeding and failing to wear a seatbelt. He received a summons for marijuana and was released at the scene. You've seen this in movies. I happen to know a couple of people that have done things like this, where you get pulled over, you don't know what to do with your bag, and you swallow. But normally you swallow the contents of the bag.
I was just about to say, I don't know anybody that's actually swallowed the bag. Definitely know some people who've swallowed the weed.
The stuff that's inside of the bag. Yes. I don't know anybody that's actually swallowed the bag, and that's what this guy did. But he choked on it, and the cop had to pull the Heimlich on him, and he choked up the bag of weed, which I can't imagine. I understand being in a pressure-packed situation, but this is not somebody that I would want taking the final shot in a basketball game, even a church league game.
It's weed, man. Like, I don't know how much trouble you can get into for just getting caught with a little bit of weed in any state in the country. Yeah. Like, I'm sure there's still trouble to be had. Okay, I'm sure you're gonna end up hiring an attorney and going to court. I don't know that there's any state where you're like getting booked that night. I might be wrong on that. Okay. Mississippi might be that state. I have no idea. But I think, like, if you just got a little bag of weed that you could swallow, I mean, obviously he doesn't have any weight because you're not choking that down.
Exactly.
Then I can't imagine it being something worth trying to just swallow. Like, that is a throw it under the car seat situation, and
just hope they find it,
you know. But damn,
I mean, my guy, or stuff it in your pocket, whatever. Like, if you're speeding,
put this shit down your junk or something. But don't.
Yes,
I,
Like, it's just stupid.
You got a bag of weed small enough to swallow. What are you doing? Like,
man? It wasn't like they don't have how much it actually was, but it.
But can't,
like,
I'm just assuming
he was released at the scene.
The size of my mouth can't be big enough to fit that much weed in it.
Agreed. Agreed. It's unreal. But it was enough that the cop let him go. I mean, he had a summons for it, but like.
And the worst situation is like, this is one where, of course, I don't know. I'm not always the smartest guy in the world. Like, look, if there was ever a time where I need to smoke, is after this whole situation. Can you let me keep a little pinch?
Yes.
Just, I'll get home. I'll get home safe. I won't do anything ridiculous on the road, but I need to chill out just a little bit after this whole situation.
Hey, Matt Miller jumped to, hey, Damien's here. He said, what's up? Nice to see Damien. Hey, what's up, Damien? And Matt Miller said, very little. It's funny. People make bigger deals out of stuff like that and make the situation actually worse. Yes.
Yeah.
All the time.
I really think if I had a small enough bag of weed to swallow and I was so paranoid, if I got pulled over, I think I would just tell the cop, hey, I have this, like, if you say nothing and he can't smell it, then you're probably fine. But if you just give it to him, he's going to take it. You're going to be out whatever it is that you cost. Okay, that sucks, but it's better than fighting. It's better than doing all this bullshit.
Yes.
I got to think the cop's going to be like, I don't want to do paperwork for this. He's going to put it in his pocket and he's probably going to smoke it when he gets home.
100%. 100% of the time, man.
I shouldn't say that. Oh, not all cops smoke weed. Even if they do, they're not wrong. All. They're not bad guys. Screw that.
No, hey, you know what? Weed ain't bad, man. It's all good. It is all good.
They need to smoke after what they got to do for a living.
Hey, you better believe that. You better believe that. All right. Is there anything else we need to hit on?
No, let's get out of here, brother.
Hey, Home Run Derby. Fun. Home Run Derby was last night.
Home Run Derby was fun. Yeah. My boy Soto did well. And
Pete Alonso has made more in the last two Home Run Derbies than he has actually earned playing baseball.
His career earnings are like $1.2 million, and he's or 1.8 maybe. He's made $2 million at the Home Run Derby.
That's just so stupid, man. So stupid.
Baseball is such a weird-ass sport. It's just a weird-ass sport.
It absolutely is.
I will tell you, the new Home Run Derby rules, now I say new as in I'm old, and they used to be one thing, and for the last like 5 years they've been in this new way, are amazing. They're just amazing. It's just the best way to put this show on.
I think so, too. I mean, it actually gives it a time limit. Like,
God, it's so fun.
I'm good
with it. It moves this thing along. It makes a drama. It's unbelievable.
They are doing a good job with some of these new rules.
Yeah,
I think so. So we like to trash talk MLB a little bit here and there, but they're fixing some things. So we'll keep giving them a shot if they keep doing stuff.
Nobody
like this
wants to see Stanton and Judge versus Pete Alonso. Both those two meatheads can piss off.
You're 100% right. 100% right. Matt Miller said, I want to see Stanton versus Judge versus Alonso's.
That's what I just said. Nobody wants to see that. He didn't really want to see that.
I don't want to see Judge. I could care less. I could care less about Stanton.
Who
cares?
Call me when those guys are good.
All right, let's get out of here. You guys have been absolutely fantastic. Go to winningcureseverything.com. Go to sbrpicks.com/NCAAF. All those links are down in the description of the podcast. If you're listening or if you're watching, it's on YouTube. Click in the description there. Very easy to get to. You guys take care of yourself. Take care of each other. Hopefully, all of your tickets cash this week. Thanks for checking out Winning Cures Everything. If you want to keep up with us, hit subscribe on YouTube or your favorite podcast app, visit the website at winningcureseverything.com, or you can like us on Facebook or follow us at Winning Cures, at Gary WCE, or at Chris B. Giannini on Twitter. Share out the show, leave a nice review, and make sure to comment and tweet at us.